We'll listen to Ronnie. Ronnie remembers, remembers the oldies, the 50s and 60s.
Speaking of the 60s, that's when the Poppy family were formed. And in 1970, the music world became aware of them as Which Way You Goin' Billy became an American, Canadian, and international hit. The lead singer on that record has some amazing stories and great music to share with us today, including one story that's very personal and not primarily related to music. It's my pleasure to introduce award-winning singer, a little drum roll here, Susan Jax. And Susan, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ronnie. It's good to talk to you again.
About 24 years ago, though it seems like yesterday, I interviewed you when I was doing a local country music show on a station called WTTM in Trenton. Back then you were doing country music. You were the label called Complete Records.
That's right, in Nashville.
They never figured out how to spell it correctly. They spelled it C-O-M-P-L-E-A-T.
I know. I always wondered that. I wonder why it's E-A-T.
They didn't know how to spell it.
That was the reason.
Ask a question and you got the answer. Okay. Anyway, we're going to get serious right now. Susan, it's a pleasure to have you on the show. Are you actually born Susan Peskowitz?
Yes.
I did it right.
You did it really well.
In Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada.
Yes.
And presently living where?
Well, I'm actually living back in Vancouver now. I was living in Nashville for 21 years and moved back in this area. My husband was diagnosed with lung cancer, my second husband.
Right. And, that was Ted. His name was Ted.
Yes, Dushinsky.
Dushinsky. He was a Canadian Football League player.
Oh, very, very well
known. For the Saskatchewan Rough Riders.
You've done your homework.
I've tried. And you were married in 1980. You had a son, Thad.
Yes.
And how old is Thad now?
He's 32.
Is he in the music business?
No, actually he paints. Creativity came out in a different kind of way.
I see. And, well, everybody has their own talents, as they say.
That's right.
You were married to Ted for quite some time, up until his death in 2005.
Right.
And he was 61 years old.
Right.
We're going to take the story now back to the beginning. Perhaps it began when you were about 13 years old and you were on radio, and then you had your own radio show, your own TV show. What was the story with that?
A local radio station, actually, in Haney, B.C. That's basically where I started my career. Although I had started singing at different times through my life, but it was not a career, per se. I just loved to sing, always loved to sing.
Right.
And in Haiti, I kind of started my career, and there was a local radio station that wanted to give me a half-hour radio show.
Right.
Me
wow.
singing. And in those days, I kind of sang a little bit like Judy Collins, you know, with that kind of sort of high, folky voice. But anyway, I did the show, and when I was 15, auditioned for a cross-Canada TV show called Music Hop. And so I became a regular on that for a few years.
So pretty early in your life, you knew that singing was something that you enjoyed doing.
It was so much a part of me. When I was in Haney, for instance, and it became more a part of me as I kind of got older, you know, I would sing in the school choirs. I would sing all the time. My brothers used to tell me to be quiet because they were trying to watch cartoons, and I was always singing. Every minute of the day, I was singing.
What are your brothers' names?
Oh, my gosh.
You have that many?
Yeah, I have Rick and Bruce and Jerry and Wayne. I'm going to miss somebody.
Billy?
And Billy. Yes, that's
okay,
where the song
like,
came
is
from.
He like last but not least, or you just forgot him?
Oh, no. The last one was Jim.
Oh, the last one was Jim. Oh, you're trying to do it in order.
Yes, I was just the only way I can remember them all.
By the way, we want to mention that Billy is very important for a number of reasons, which we're going to get to particularly at the end of this interview when we talk about something very personal to you. When did you meet Terry, your first husband?
Actually, he used to be with a local group here in Vancouver called the Chessmen, and I guess they had made an appearance on Music Hop, and I kind of met him. I didn't really talk to him very much, but I had heard through the grapevine, you know, it's like in the music industry stuff goes around,
right,
that his group had broken up, and I needed somebody to accompany me on guitar, because I was asked to sing at like an Elks Club meeting or something in a little town outside of Vancouver. I called a few people, and as with most musicians, they're always busy, and Terry wasn't. So he said he would play guitar for me, and so he did. And he accompanied me on a few things. And then we brought in Craig McCaw, who was a guitar player. He ended up being a part of the Poppy family, of course.
Right.
And then as the group started, I stopped doing my own solo work and concentrated more on doing all my singing for the group. And then we added Satwant Singh. And right. Anyway, so that's basically how it started.
Actually, so you actually had like a group at that time, and it was you and Terry and the other two people you mentioned there?
That was the Poppy family.
Right.
That, we weren't called the Poppy family until we had evolved to the point where we got Satwant Singh in the group.
You can probably figure out my next question. Why did you name yourself the Poppy family?
Well, you know, we had had these really stupid names. Well, not stupid, but there was one we called the Power Line, and it just really didn't suit us. We didn't like that, and then we decided that we had to get something that was more kind of with the times and more contemporary and maybe a little different. So we were actually sitting. We would rehearse all the time at Terry's parents' place. They had a big, beautiful home in Shaughnessy in the elite area of Vancouver at that time. And so we would rehearse in there at their house all the time. And we were sitting in, I guess, Terry's mother's and father's study. And at that point in time, I sort of go back a little bit because we hadn't brought Satwant in yet, but we decided that we were going to look through newspapers and magazines and whatever just to see what we could find. Something that would trigger something that would sound good as a group name. And we went through newspapers and we went through, you know, everything, magazines, whatever we could say. And then we picked up the dictionary and thought, well, let's see what maybe we'll get. And we were flipping through pages and trying this and trying that. And then we came to the Poppy family.
A species of flower known as the Poppy family.
Yeah. And, you know, we thought, well, it'll give us a symbol.
Right.
And, you know, with the flower, it kind of might indicate that there's a girl in the group. And,
yeah.
And of course, Poppy, being in the psychedelic days, it was perfect.
Right. That's right. This was like the flower power age, basically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it worked, and you had a name. Now, when did you marry Terry?
I married him maybe about 2 years after we started.
What year are we talking about when you started playing together?
67.
67. Billy came.
Well, we recorded in 69, and it happened in 70.
Terry wrote the song, but it was Which Way You Going, somebody else, right?
Yes. It was originally called Which Way You Going, Buddy. I'm serious. And actually, a really good friend of mine who used to appear on the same Cross Canada TV show, Music Hop, his name is Michael Vincent. He was Mike Campbell at the time. And I think there must have been another Mike Campbell because he changed his name to Michael Vincent. But he's a wonderful, wonderful singer. And he had recorded the demo. And it never really got finished. You know, he wasn't too crazy about it. Actually, I wasn't crazy about it either. But
Which Way You Going, Buddy?
Yes.
Okay.
And it was from a guy's point of view. And I really didn't like it. I thought it was awful. But I really liked the melody. I thought the melody was, you know, really captivating. So I asked if Terry would rewrite it from a girl's point of view. Because I would like to sing it, but not the way it was, obviously.
Sure. Okay.
It just really wasn't very good at that point. So he rewrote it, and we had to look for something else rather than Buddy. So we decided, well, I've got six brothers. Let's go through those first. So, you know, which way are you going, Bruce?
No, I didn't.
You know, no. And we got to Billy, and it was perfect.
Actually,
all these years, he's so proud that he is the Billy.
This one was a number one hit in Canada. And in the United States, it got to number two on the Billboard chart and number one in Cashbox.
Right.
So we'll average the two and we'll say it peaked at number 1.5.
Perfect.
And it sold 3 million copies around the world.
Right.
Which way are you going, Billy? Can I go too? Which way are you? All
you going, Billy? And that's the Poppy Family featuring Susan Jax. I think I have seen some pressings of the record that have said the Poppy Family featuring Susan Jax. Am I correct?
Right. Actually, we were the Poppy Family featuring Susan Jax.
Oh, okay. We wanted people to know that it wasn't Terry doing the singing on that one.
No, actually, he didn't do much of the singing at all in the Poppy Family.
No.
He did a couple of things.
Yeah, we're going to play one of those exceptions in a few moments. I'm Ronnie Allen, and I am talking to the wonderful Susan Jax. I just made you blush. Wonderful.
You did.
And your voice is just so special. Did you take singing lessons?
No, I didn't. I think it was probably because I sang so much when I was young that I just sort of evolved into, you know, a certain style, I guess.
You know, just what you do, the thing that all of your records, they just sound so natural. And you've been compared with a lot of other singers, but you have your own style, really.
Well, in those days, that was a big thing. You were supposed to be unique. I don't think that's so much anymore.
No, I think you know, times have changed. You're talking.
I think so, but, you know, in those days, you were encouraged to be your own self.
True,
but I listened to so many people because I learned from so many people.
You're talking in those days when there was actually a thing called tune, melody, music.
When you didn't get tuned up in the studio. Yeah, you had to be on key because nobody was there to tune you up. So.
Right, absolutely. You proved that your group, the Poppy Family, was not a one-hit wonder because you followed it up with a record called That's Where I Went Wrong. Was that another Terry Jacks composition?
Yes, it was.
It didn't sound like the son of Which Way You Going, Billy. It's a little bit more up-tempo.
I remember hearing it, and I liked the song. I did like it. I found that it was leaning towards country, you know, with the first album. So much of it was kind of psychedelic pop. And now when I look back on all of it, even Which Way Going, Billy, was that was pretty country for today's standards.
Actually, yeah, even though it wasn't considered country then.
Oh, no.
It was considered a nice little pop record.
Yes, but, I know.
But That's Where I Went Wrong. These days might have been considered more country, certainly, than it was
absolutely.
Back then. About that record is it's haunting, the beginning. It grabs you right immediately. You say, that's one I want to hear.
It's kind of funny because, you know, I sort of always sang to everything, and I would sing along to even intros and things as we're starting to record things. And it was something that we ended up keeping because it was so unique to us. I would do things that were almost like an instrument. But we did a lot of experimenting in the studio. Nowadays, I would be considered a co-producer by today's standards. But back then, you know, that those were kind of right at the beginning of the women's lib.
Back in those days, if you were a producer, you were male, pretty much.
Oh, absolutely. I was just a chick singer.
You had a third Poppy Family single, and this particular single was a little bit different because we actually heard Terry doing some vocals with you. This was like a vocal duet, and it was called Where Evil Grows.
Yes.
Okay, I got it right. Where Evil Grows. What's the rest of the sentence? Where evil grows, something happens? I said, where evil grows, trouble comes. And then this, where evil
it's,
grows,
well,
what?
You know, I don't know. I have
I
to say back
I
on the lyrics. If it even, if evil grows, there is no where evil grows line in the song. It's like evil grows here and evil grows there.
We're going to have to listen to it very carefully, and everybody pay attention because there might be a surprise quiz after I play it.
Okay.
This is Susan Jacks along with Terry on this particular record. This is Where Evil Grows.
I like the way you smile at me. I felt the heat that enveloped me. And what I saw, I like to see. I never knew where evil grew. Told me to keep clear of you, but something drew me near to you. I never knew where evil grew. Evil grows in the dark, where the sun it never shines. Evil grows in cracks and holes and lives in people's minds. Evil grew, it's part of you, and now it seems to be that every time I look at you, evil grows in me.
Family. From that particular record, it was the two of them, a little bit of a contrast. You actually had three records that we've just played, and each one was different, the tempo, style.
Yes, that was kind of nice because, and that was in the early stages of the Poppy Family, which I believe was the magical time when Craig and Sat were still there, and, you know, it was the four of us kind of putting all our talents together, and it was really unique and different. To me, that was a magical time, and that's what kind of set the stage for the Poppy Family.
If you go on the internet, you see so many comments about this song. I have to tell you, Susan, that this particular song that I'm going to mention, I like it at least as much as Which Way You Going, Billy. I think it is so special. There are some people that say it is their absolute favorite Poppy Family song. and it's called Winter Milk.
It was on one of our albums. Somebody had sent the song to us, you know, to consider, and I fell in love with it. That could be one of my all-time Poppy Family favorite songs. It's just about a girl who lived in a really small town.
Mm-hmm.
Williams Lake, by the way, is in B.C.
I see.
Here, in British Columbia.
Right.
And it's about a girl who just lives in a really small town, lives on a, you know, like a farm kind of thing. And as the song says, a lot of guys come through, and she's had her heart broken a few times because she's just a simple girl who puts her heart out. She's been hurt because guys just kind of come through for it. They're very transient, and they move on. And,
right.
And then this one guy happens who seems different from the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And she thinks, oh, and so she's totally gone with this guy. She thinks he is just everything.
Right.
And then sure enough, he goes to.
Gee.
And
you mean he becomes like all the rest? Is that what you're telling us?
Well, I think the poignant part of the song is that he wasn't like all the rest.
Right.
But he did end up going, and who would have known? You know, she would have never believed that it could ever happen.
He broke her heart.
He broke her heart.
The term winter milk, I assume I'm not the only one in the world that doesn't quite understand the term. Can you tell us, like, what the significance of winter milk is?
Well, cows in the summertime, you know, when they're eating lots of grass and good stuff, the milk is very rich. And in the winter, it isn't as rich. It's kind of gray and thin, and that's what this guy wrote into the song. It represents what happened to this relationship that she thought she had with this guy.
Things are usually harder than they seem to need to be. You learn that up on these stump branches by your mama's knee, as she stooped over swearing at the cow to please hold still, and gray into the pale steamed winter. Different men pass through for picking or for haying, and most are famouser for going to beer parlors and saving, and it's only the rare one who isn't mainly on the make, and him he took a job at Williams Lake. Well, it didn't seem too much unless you got how underneath it flowed along so full and hard, like a June creek where all the snow is melt, that no one dreams would run as thin as winter.
Song.
I felt the very same way about it when I sang it. When we recorded it, it was in a little studio in Vancouver here, and it was on a busy street.
Uh-huh.
And there was a big truck that went by, and they didn't want to stop it because, you know, it was one of those songs that I kind of went right through the song.
Yeah, you didn't want to break the mood.
No, because it was all getting down on tape, and they didn't want to break the mood, so they didn't stop the
tape. They didn't stop it. You don't hear the truck on the record.
No, I think nowadays you could when we first put it out, but now they can filter that stuff out.
Here's what's really funny, ladies and gentlemen. What Susan has not told us is she later found out that that truck was a milk truck.
Wouldn't that be funny?
And with that funny line, I'm Ronnie Allen, and we're going to kind of leave the Poppy family right now. You and Terry got divorced around 1973, was it? Or so?
Right. Well, I left the marriage, divorced a year later or so.
Was that the end of the Poppy family, basically, or did you continue?
Actually, it had happened before that. Terry had made the decision that we should record on our own. So I recorded the I Thought of You Again album, and You Don't Know What Love Is came from that.
And that was a Susan Jacks record?
Yes.
Okay. Also, you were doing the backup singing on Seasons in the Sun.
Well, we recorded that before I left the marriage.
Seasons in the Sun by Terry Jacks. And it is you doing the backup singing. Is it just you, or is it anybody else?
No, it's just me. I produced his vocals on it.
You produced his vocals. Did you get credit?
Oh, heck no.
Oh, wow.
Remember
ladies and gentlemen, we're going to amend that right now. The co-producer of that record was, in fact, Susan Jacks. Did they overdub your voice? Because it sounded like there were more than one of you on there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I recorded a few voices.
We're going to play a little bit of that record right now. You all know it. This hit number one on the chart and was number one in so many countries of the world. Terry Jacks, and this is Seasons in the Sun with Susan doing the backup singing.
Goodbye, Papa, it's hard to die when all the birds are singing in the sky. Now that the spring is in the air, children everywhere. When you see them, I'll be there. We had joy, we had fun.
The interesting thing about Seasons in the Sun is that's one of those songs where you either love it or hate it. I have seen people vote that as their all-time favorite song, and I've seen other people say that's the worst song that was ever written. I don't know. That's true of a lot of tearjerkers like Honey, Bobby Goldberg.
Oh, I know, and they're usually hits. Well, you know, the funny thing is we had gone down to L.A. The Beach Boys were friends of ours, and we were trying to convince them to record Seasons in the Sun. So they went into the studio, and they could never get it finished because some of the guys were really into it and some weren't. And so it was never really finished. But Al Jardine and I wrote the backup vocals. I changed them a little bit when we got to Terry's thing, but we were writing them for the guys. But anyway, we came back to Vancouver, and Terry was disappointed because it just never got done. I know there's some kind of a version out there now, but it was never really finished. But when we came back, I said, Terry, why don't you record it? And he said, nah. I said, come on, let's just go in the studio and record it. So I convinced him to go in and record it, and he still didn't want to release it.
You're the one that convinced him to do it. I've interviewed Terry because I used to work for Casey Kasem years ago. And when I interviewed Terry, he basically said, I never saw this as a recording that I wanted to do. When he spoke to me, he didn't say, Susan, try to get me to record it.
I know. He said something about the paper boy heard it or something, and I thought,
Terry
never read the paper in his life.
Come on, Terry, come on, give me a break.
Oh, he's so silly.
At any rate, we're going to move on now to play a couple of recordings that were Susan Jacks recordings. There was a song that you did, which became a huge hit in Canada, called You Don't Know What Love Is. I think you got to number three on the Canadian charts, and that was in 1973.
I mentioned earlier that Terry decided we were going to record separate albums, and so we recorded Seasons in the Sun for him, and we recorded I Thought of You Again album for me, and that was from my solo album.
In the dark, way down deep, I feel that something stays awake while I sleep. And in the day, when you're around, I find it hard to keep myself on the ground. But you don't know. And I can't understand. up is that I just can't seem to give you enough. You've got to know I need love too, and yet I haven't ever got it from you.
You and Terry were divorced. You continued to work together on projects.
Well, he actually approached me to sing a song. He had had another girl singer sing it. I guess I don't know what he wanted to do with it, but he had another girl singer sing it, and he didn't like the way she did it and asked me if I would sing it. Kind of a demo, as far as I knew. And that was All the Tea in China.
Glad you mentioned that, because just by coincidence, that happened to be the next one that I'm going to play. And it's actually from 1980, I believe.
Right. I recorded it, mm-hmm. and then he kind of worked a deal out with my record label that he would be the producer on my next album.
Oh.
And he is not easy to work with, and I was not really pleased about it, but that's what the record company wants to do.
Okay.
So I did.
Well, we're going to listen to All the Tea in China, which got some notoriety in Canada.
Okay.
I don't know if it did anything in China, though. I'm not sure.
I don't know.
China. And up next is Anna Marie. This one is kind of different. It's up-tempo.
I loved the song. Claire Lawrence produced that album for me, and that's probably one of my favorite albums.
1975, we're talking about, for this Dream album.
He brought the song to me. It was written by Bruce Miller from the Vancouver area, and I loved it. I loved the feel of it. I loved the tempo of it.
You're not the only one that loved it. It was nominated for a Juno Award.
Yes.
Is that like the Grammy Awards in Canada?
Yes. Yeah.
Let's take a listen to it right now. This is Susan Jacks and Anna Marie. Another song right now, and then we're going to get to a story that I am sure is going to touch people's hearts. It certainly touched me, and I'm going to bring everybody up to date on that story, something very personal, of course, to you. This song got an off-the-wall title. I see I have a copy of it. I haven't really even listened to it, but I have to play it because of the title, Mr. Vincent's Dancing Class.
Right.
You guys supposed to say, where did you dig that one up?
That's right. Well, in Vancouver, there's a University of British Columbia, and there was a Mr. Vincent who taught dance at the university. Somebody presented the song to me and asked if I would sing it. I think they'd already recorded the band track. So I said I would. I thought it was just charming. And, you know, I am like I'll sing anything or anytime or anywhere. And, you know, I've never kind of discriminated and tried to sort of maintain distance or anything. It's just I love to sing. And so I thought, yeah, I said I'd sing it. Right. And then it ended up being released as a single.
This goes out to all the Susan Jacks fans around the world who love this record. And, of course, to Mr. Vincent himself.
Mr. Vincent taught us how to dance the foxtrot and the tango. You take your shoes off and leave them near the door. Smile and be happy, and suddenly you're began to play, sweet and slow. Step, step together, step. Gliding toward me was that old-fashioned man. Bowed to me politely and offered his hand. All of a sudden I was back again in Mr. Vincent's dancing class.
That's a little bit different from which way you're going, just a little bit different from everything else you've done here. And we got just a few more minutes. We're going to close, by the way, with a song that is associated with Roy Orbison. Roy did a version of it, and it's a beautiful song called Evergreen. That'll be our closing record. Susan, many of us just take things for granted. We tend to sweat the small things, minor annoyances in life. You drop something, oh darn, and everything. But when you deal with health issues, that turns out to be a biggie. And you assume when you're going to wake up in the morning, you know, everything is going to be fine, the day is going to be normal. By the way, I do want to stress that I talked briefly to Susan before this, so I'm not hitting you by surprise. You said you'd be
not
willing to talk
all.
About this. I guess it was a few years ago that you found out that you had kidney disease, and it was pretty significant. And maybe you could just fill us in just a little bit on what happened and what you had to do about it.
I was still living in Nashville, actually, and during a regular exam, they found that there were abnormal things happening, and they sent me to a kidney specialist.
And what year was this? Are we talking about?
Oh, my gosh. That had to be like 6 or 7 years ago.
6 or 7 years ago. Okay.
And so I went to see a nephrologist, and they couldn't find anything and said, come back in a year. Well, by the time that year had gone by, my husband, Ted, had been diagnosed with lung cancer, and I wanted to bring him home. Actually, we had been separated for a few years, but we'd stayed such good friends, and I became his caregiver because he was my good friend, and so I wanted to bring him back here so that he could be close to his family and my family. So when I got back, I went to the doctor here, and they asked me how long I'd been in kidney failure, and my mouth dropped to the floor because I had no idea.
They didn't tell you that you had kidney failure a year earlier?
They didn't see it then. It just showed up as a little bit of an abnormal sample or something that I went through during a regular checkup. And so I went to the doctor up here and in Vancouver, and they've been watching me ever since. That was in, I guess, 2004, and it just kind of progressed. It was kind of slow for a while, and I say slow, I mean it was fast for me, because you never want it to progress. And they said it'll either go away, which it does. More often than not, it goes away.
Even what they call kidney failure, like remission type of thing?
Well, because your kidneys can actually repair themselves.
Oh, okay.
So there is a chance that it will go away, or you can stop the process.
I see.
You know, I mean, things, it can happen. But for me, there was nothing that was stopping it, and I stayed on a really good diet. I was being a very good girl and following doctor's orders, but it was not stopping. And actually, in February last year, it was 28, and then I got the flu or something, and it dropped to 14.
What you're talking about is something called the GFR?
The GFR, yes.
There's a measurement that measures kidney function. It's called the GFR, and normal is supposed to be like around what?
Normal is 90.
Oh, normal is 90.
Now, as you get older, it does go down anyway.
I see.
When I first got to Vancouver, it was probably around 59, and then it started to go down slowly, and then last year, as I said, it had gone down to 28 over the previous 3 years or so.
During the period of time that you dropped 14 points, were there any symptoms, like, during the year? I mean, did you have any pain? Was it just asymptomatic?
Kidney disease can be very asymptomatic until you get quite down there. And by the time I reached 9, I was very tired. And I didn't really have pain. Some people do.
Were you doing any public performances at that
time? I was. And as a matter of fact, in August, what tipped me off, I had done a concert here. And when I got off stage, my ankles were so swollen.
That's a symptom then, I guess.
Yeah, and I thought, because it was pretty warm out, and I thought maybe it was that, but it was more than, I mean, it was weird, because I just don't get swelling. And I had gotten minimal before that, but never like this. I took my shoes off and couldn't even put them back on. And then when I had my blood test the next couple of days, they said that my GFR was down to 9.
Oh, gee.
So obviously they said I was crashing and I had no room. They wanted me to go on dialysis or at least get ready to go on it. And so I was getting all ready for dialysis and I said, you know, I don't want to go on dialysis yet. Let me go through and see if there's anybody that matches me
right.
in my family rather than go on the dialysis. And they were kind of worried because I was one of those people that could have to go in for emergency dialysis. But I just said, well, let's just hang in there.
Wow.
Let's just see.
You know, you're a brave girl.
Well, I just, you know, I didn't want to go through all the process if it was. And I, you know, I knew that ideally if I had a live donor and whatever. Anyway, all my brothers and sisters stepped up. But only two of them matched. And my brother Billy, well, he was the youngest.
The youngest.
So they chose.
Okay. They chose
and he
Billy.
Also would not stop. Billy was the one that kept calling and saying, where's my paperwork? He wanted to get it done. He wanted to make sure I was okay before I crashed, before anything desperate happened. And he just kept calling, whatever. He was
bless
a really good
him. Bless
my
him.
Hero.
What can I tell you? On February 17th of this year, you received a kidney from Billy.
Right.
And how were the next few days after that? When you woke up, did you feel any a lot of pain or anything? I mean, what's
well, I felt normal pain that you would feel from
right.
an operation,
yes.
you know. But basically, that was about it. And Billy's he's back to normal. He's just, you know, working
normal.
And carrying on like he always did.
Oh.
It takes me a little bit longer, but they tell me that it's because my body was pretty sick at the time, so it takes me a longer time to recover
I
than
see.
It would him. First, he gave me a hit record, and then he saved my life. I owe him a really big Christmas present this year, I'm thinking.
The prognosis is for you to make a total recovery.
Yes.
Susan, this has just been a joy for me.
Well, me too, Ronnie. Thank you.
I want to thank you for sharing not only your musical life, your career, but also the very special story that you just shared. And I just want to wish you just every bit of health, happiness, and success the remainder of this year and many, many years to come.
Thank you, Ronnie.
I wanted to mention one other thing before we get to Evergreen. You are going into the studio and you're going to be recording an album. Are you going to be producing it?
Yes. When I was in Nashville, I became a staff songwriter for many years, and I have a lot of songs that I felt kind of special about, and I'm going to record them on a CD.
Fantastic. And
yeah.
You're going to be doing this within the next few weeks?
Yes, I'm just getting back where I can put pressure on my stomach. You use your muscles a lot in your stomach when you sing.
Oh, maybe the singing is going to help you get back to normal. I mean,
oh, yeah. And I've been doing some, so as soon as I get back to top form, then I'll be able to go in the studio.
That's fantastic.
But we'll probably go in before too long and start doing the tracks anyway.
You're going to be doing some live appearances?
Yes. Actually, I'm talking to the Canadian Kidney Foundation about doing a Cross Canada benefit tour for them next March.
One other thing before we get to Evergreen, you know, we've been delaying Evergreen for the last half hour, but it's going to be worth it because it's a great song and a great performance. I understand that you're being inducted into the British Columbia Entertainment Hall of Fame.
Yes.
June 27th of this year.
I am so excited.
Wow.
I am so excited.
Congratulations.
Thank you
and,
so much.
And so well deserved.
Oh, well, thanks.
Susan, we're going to leave the show right now with a song that was originally recorded by Roy Orbison, and there's kind of a tragic story related to this. Now, Roy didn't write the song. He performed it initially. I know he recorded it because there is a recording of it, but he was performing it shortly before his wife, Claudette, died in a motorcycle accident.
Right. He never sang it again after that. That's the story I heard, predominantly because he knew that it had been written for him and his wife, and once she passed away, it was just too painful to sing.
So there was that tragic overtone to it, and you decided to make a recording of Evergreen in 1981. At least that's when it was released.
Right.
And it's a beautiful song.
It is a beautiful song.
We're going to close with that song. This is Susan Jacks and Evergreen.
Sometimes love will bloom in the springtime. Then like flowers in summer, it will grow. But when it's evergreen,
The show. And now a couple of bonus tracks by Susan Jax. The first one is one that she did as lead singer of the Poppy Family. This is Good Friends.
And when the love died, I never asked why. You never know what makes it end. When the night comes, and when I'm lonely, and when it's only you I need, I wonder, will you be by me to perform a good friend's deed? But the days went by, and the pain it grew. You must have known what I was going through, you know, but I never even heard a word from you. What good friends do.
Finally, we close with Susan's version of a song called You're a Part of Me.
If I could, you.